Well, what is Moody's man? Not man, Moody's man. We're Moody's mamen.
Yep.
We're Moody's men. But this is about magazine on RTR.
G'day, Jody.
G'day, Jim.
Where you been, girl?
Oh, look, I've been here and I've been there. I feel like I've been everywhere, Jim.
Thank you so much for coming in and
nice
taking
to be here.
Helping out when Nick's on assignment somewhere in the great outdoors.
How you been?
Oh, yeah.
I see you everywhere, Jim Morrison.
It's all good. And, it's good to be back in the studio here. It seems like a long time that we were here together.
It does. And, you're very busy, and I know Nick's very busy, and it's always great to just pop in and have a yarn for this hour every Thursday on RTR FM. And what a big show today.
Well, big show today. Yes, the man that made Dark Emu famous. Or what do we call it? Waitch?
Yes.
Malu. Malu in Yamaji. Waitch in Noongar is the big emu, and it's what Wajin was named after. The Waitch. So Dark Emu, we're going to be talking to Bruce Pascoe today, and the fallout from his amazing book of 2014, The Dark Emu, and all the things that have been said since, which is quite damaging, but I think might be hurtful, but I think a breath of fresh air, Jodie. The whole thing's a breath of fresh air.
And, you know, I think in meeting Bruce for the next hour, we're going to find out a lot more about resilience. He sure would have had to have a fair bit of resilience with a lot of the controversy that was surrounding the Dark Emu. And look, it was an extraordinary book, shortlisted for the History Book Award in the 2014 Queensland Literary Awards, also the same year for the Victorian Premier's Awards for Indigenous Writing, won Book of the Year in the New South Wales Premier Literary Awards in 2016, and won the Indigenous Writers Prize that same year in the New South Wales Premier's Literacy Awards. But I'm really keen to see how the process unfolded of coming up with The Dark Emu and how we coped with, you know, all of the surrounding, you know, there was lateral violence there. There was so much controversy that it stirred up. I think resilience will really show through in this interview.
Oh, and I think resilience is probably a great word. A bit of anxiousness sort of slips in there, and that's, I think the whole voice thing is polarising to the point where I'm getting quite anxious. And I suppose a lot of First Nations people would be too, so it'd be good to get Bruce's comments on that. But, Jodie, I read the book, the first edition, and I bawled my eyes out, but I'm just a big sook, I wear my heart on my sleeve. But why it was so impactful for me is that we've for too long been considered just dumb blackfellas. Hunters and gatherers. And I think that's what the whole institution of colonisation has meant for us. So for me, you know, when he attempts and does it well, dispels the myths about, you know, agriculturalist, architecture, engineering. It's just so inspiring. As I say, I got angry with a lot of white fellas after I read that book. I really did. And you shouldn't do that. I mean, you shouldn't do that. But for new developments, new research to come into being, and so it'll be great to get his thoughts and insights as to how he's developed to this point.
And it's challenging for the other, isn't it? Because they're quite happy for us to stay in that little box, you know. So it's challenging.
If you just tuned in, Bruce Pascoe's our guest today, an amazing writer of amazing research, and so stay tuned and listen to Moody's Mag with Jodie coming in to take. Take a bit of shine and heat off Nick, because he's busy too, and it's good to be in the studio. And our listeners, welcome back to Moody's Mag. It's 92.1, and if you've got any issues with what we're about to talk about today, 0405 921 921. That's 0405 921 921. Let's go to a song. Yeah, Noongar Koori girl there, me Donovan. Father comes from Busselton, and the famous Donovan family from northern New South Wales, with Kian there, Take No More. And I'm just reminded that great song. We're going to use it in a documentary coming up, Jodie.
When you get your time to do a documentary, Jim Morrison.
Okay, and on the line is Bruce Pascoe. Good morning, Bruce. It's probably good afternoon over there. How are you?
Yeah, it is, but it's good morning anyway.
Bruce, thanks for coming on the show. My co-host, Jodie Hoffman, a famous broadcaster in her own right and won awards for Law Matters, which goes national. So say hello to Jodie, Bruce.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Glad to hear you are.
Yeah, look, we're wrapped. You can join us for the program this week, Bruce Pascoe, and talk about, you know, your life on the East Coast and Dark Emu, and a fascinating book, and just really looking forward to the next hour yarning with you.
Well, we hope you can spend an hour. We know our time is busy for you, Bruce. But look, let me just start by saying welcome to Noongar Boodja. Wanju Noongar Boodja, and you've been here many times. But look, I just want to give a bit of background, because I read your first edition some time back, some years ago, and it was on a flight from Perth to Brisbane. And honestly, the what I wrote, what I read, it brought me to tears. I was quite emotional, and I was getting upset with a lot of white people about how we've been treated. So. under that sort of preamble, where it's really a pleasure to talk to you about this amazing text that you've put together, Dark Emu, Bruce. So welcome to Noongar Radio and RTRFM. So let's start off. Who's your mob and where you're from?
We're Bunurong, Tasmanian and Yuin. Most Aboriginal people have got our family spread around, and it's not our fault. It's part of colonisation that we were split apart, and but I'm proud to belong to all of those nations, and I'm living on Yuin land. Where I am here on the river is southernmost part of Yuin land, and it gives me great comfort at this time of my life, which is far advanced, to be have been on this country for about 40 years.
Wow. Yes, you're right about it. We don't know, you know, we're scattered across all sorts of tribal clans. And I went to a funeral this week, sadly, and, you know, there's many funerals happening at the moment. But and to meet people I hadn't met before in my nearly 70 years, finding out who my mob is, so finding out more coming from Stolen Generations. So, again, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I must remind you too, Bruce, a couple of years back we had a national Stolen Generation conference in Tasmania. And I bought a book for all of the Stolen Generation members that you made available. And, the point of my getting the book to Stolen Generations people was to recognise their own identity. So, but look, let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. What was the background to you developing such an amazing book, Dark Emu, Bruce? How did you come about this? I mean, it's obviously taken years to develop and get into print.
Yeah, look, it wasn't a fact of genius or anything like that, Jim. It was the fact that I was looking for family. The people I asked were amazed by my ignorance, and not just of my family, but of Aboriginal history. And so they said, look, we really can't help you until you... you know, a certain amount about the history of the country, you know, because you've been deluded. You know, I was a university graduate at that stage, and we're supposed to know everything. But in fact, we know nothing about the history of this country. It's a great shame that intelligent people can be completely deluded about what happened during the contact period. And that's deliberate. Because in writing the book, I wrote it based on explorers' journals. And the things that fascinated me about the explorers' journals was where they talked about Aboriginal people and what Aboriginal people were doing. And that was a total revelation to me. because it had never turned up in my education. And that means that the people who were designing curriculum for schools were deliberately leaving it out, deliberately leaving out Aboriginal accomplishment. So those old people that I was asking about family, they said, you've got to know these things first. So they set me a few challenges. And, you know, being a book sort of person, I went to the libraries and I was ashamed at how little I knew. But also I was shocked at how deliberate the campaign had been, and it's ongoing, to keep this information from Australians. Not just Australians, though, our own young people are very confused in school because they don't, sometimes they don't know these things either. And it makes them embarrassed, makes them frustrated, and it doesn't help our kids at school at all. I remember that time, the last time I met you, I was in WA, and I went to a school, won't say which one, but, you know, 65% Aboriginal population. I went to the library because I was a bit early, and you can blame my grandmother for that. She was always early, you know, didn't believe in clearing time. She believed in being on time, so she'd get there early to make sure she was. But so I was looking through the library and I was looking for any book by an Aboriginal writer, and I found none. So then I started looking for any book that talked about Australian Aboriginal people, and I found none. And then I looked on for any book about history. And, of course, I found History of First Nation American People there, Chinese people, but nothing on Australian Aboriginal people. And I was thinking, I was trying to imagine the life of a 14-year-old kid, say a girl, at that school being asked to write an assignment on history, and she chooses her own people. And she would get no help from that school, not one iota of help. And what she would come away with would be the feeling that her people don't matter to that school and to that community and to that state and to that nation. That's the feeling she would get. So when our kids get depressed and do negative things in their lives, you can sheet it back home to that point where they feel unwanted in their own country. And that shocked and hurt me then, but that's what I was trying to do with the book. It's not a work of genius. It's a work of hard work, which my family taught me all about, because that's how we survived. But also, I had to do it in honour of those old people who were shocked at my ignorance.
Wow, that's a great inspiration to get involved. I mean, I'm reminded too that probably broader Australia would know and recognise more First Nation tribes of America rather than their own in this country. Yeah. And that's an indictment of the history of our world. So, yeah, what you're saying is really quite striking. And it is about truth-telling at its best. And the last few years or since the Prime Minister announced a Voice for Us mob, I think, the truth-telling is becoming more and more difficult to cope with, I think, for a lot of broad Australians. And it's a bit like they just don't know what they don't know, or, you know, they don't want to know what they don't know as well comes into it, Bruce. So, again, thanks for taking the time to be available for RTRFM, and our listeners will be at Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM in Albany as well. So a great time to share your expertise and wisdom about what's come about as being a major seller and something that's inspired us. So, and I suppose for me too, it's how are you coping with all of this? I mean, there's been you know, you're a legend in with First Nations people, and I guess there's First Nations people that might be critical too, because we're our own worst enemies, Bruce. So how are you coping with the, I guess, the, you know, it's legend status that you have now as far as literary legendary status in this country. So how are you coping with all this?
Well, I live very remotely. I live on the Wallagra River near Mallacoota, Far East Gippsland. And as far as Victoria and New South Wales go, that's about as remote as you can get. And that, because I'm on country, and because when I'm actually looking after two little pups at the moment, my new pups, they're a real handful, so I've got to take them out all the time. And when we went out last time, we saw Kunaruk, the wood duck here. The property is named after black duck. Yumbra, and I only have to step out the door and I'm on country, and that reinvigorates me every time I see it. And she's there, she's always there for our people, and she's a great support, and that's how I survive, because I'm a really, you know, I've always lived remotely. I'm not a social person. You know, if I was looking for publicity, you would not live at Mallacoota, I can tell you. But I, the book has meant that I've had to be public. And yesterday I was in Brisbane talking to Aboriginal Catholic education teachers. And look, I wouldn't have gone there to get a free bloody pizza. I went there because we need school teachers. We need black school teachers, and we need them confident. And that's the only reason I was there. But to get back home last night when I did, and to feel the animals around me, you know, these friends, these ancestors of mine, to feel them around me was, I just felt welcome. And I felt at peace, and it was such a good feeling. And that's how I survive. And I think many Aboriginal people, when they're under duress, go out and find your country, find your country, you know, where you come from. And I know we'd be split up, but so that means you could have four or five countries, as long as you're not doing native title on all of them. But, you know, find your country and let it talk to you, and then in return, you look after it. That's the greatest solace of our people.
This is the Mudich Mag program on RTRFM, and our guest in the studio this week is Bruce Pascoe. And if you haven't read Dark Emu yet, it's a book that argues for a reconsideration of the hunter-gatherer tag for pre-colonial Aboriginal Australians and attempts to rebut the colonial myths that have worked to justify dispossession. And Bruce is joining us from the east coast of Australia, and compelling evidence from the diaries of early explorers that suggest that the systems of food production and land management have been blatantly understated in modern retellings of early Aboriginal history, and that a new look at Australia's past is required. Bruce, when you put pen to paper and penned The Dark Emu, were you aware at that time how much it would be discussed from all angles, and the controversy that it did whip up?
Yeah, I think I was. I knew that Australia was hungry for it, but also what days like yesterday showed me was that our people are the hungriest. Our own people want to be able to tell their own kids about the truth. And so Aboriginal people are the greatest advocates for Dark Emu. But I knew that broader Australia would want to change their mind about the history of the country. They know the history they were taught in school is ridiculous, that no kindergarten student would believe it without having it rammed down their throat. And so I knew Australia was going to want to change its mind, and I knew that then the far right wing would want to quell that discourse, would want to stop the revolution. And that's happened too. And, you know, the way debates have been run in this country, and you can see that from the voice debate, it's so nasty and so prejudicial, when in fact we should be having a really enlightened discussion about the history of our country. And instead of that, in today's paper, we're taking people to court for saying that the Uluru Statement is one page, not 26 pages, or 26 pages and not one page. The one page of the Uluru Statement is one of the best documents ever written by humans. It is so beautifully written, so generous and so graceful. And yet we've got some people who are managing to disrespect that document, written by Aboriginal people from all over the country. I think that's a disgrace. And here we are with an opportunity to change the constitution of this country. And we're disrespecting that opportunity as well. Now, I can understand people who want treaty first, but I think we can have it all. I think we can have treaty as well. It's going to happen in Victoria next year. Probably happen before the voice happens, because I think the voice will happen. And it's also part of the discussion around how we as a nation, we as Australians go forward. You know, when you look at the Matildas on Saturday night attempting to beat France, there's, you know, three Aboriginal players in that team, and they are playing as a team. And that's what I would like for the future of this country, is that we can get together as a team. And I know that in Western Australia there's a lot of discussion today about Juukan Gorge and, you know, the protocols around looking after country from the miners' point of view. We'll get around to that one day. But we need it to be in the Constitution, I believe. If we had the constitutional change, Juukan Gorge could not have happened. And it won't happen in the future, because Australia will grow up. Australia will stop pretending that Aboriginal people weren't here. And Aboriginal people will stand up and be proud and stop feeling like they're unwanted. And that'll be a huge change for our children, I can tell you, because just where I live down here, I see so many kids who feel disrespected by the educational system. How can they succeed in those schools when they're still arguing with the teachers about Captain Cook?
So you true. Know,
you cannot go forward.
So true. I'm just reminded of the words of Tom Griffiths, the Emeritus Professor of History at the Australian National University, where he says, "I'm grateful for a book that has so enlivened the engagement of Australians with their country's history. In spite of half a century of eloquent activism and scholarship, most Australians still grossly underestimate the sophistication of Indigenous culture, technology and governance. The popular embrace of Pascoe's work suggests that many are keen to learn." And I think you're right there. I mean, a lot of non-Aboriginal people, and I've spoken to quite a few in the last couple of months, that are keen to know about the voice in one thing, but also the truth-telling that's really required for a better Australia. So there is a lot of people who are interested. And how are you finding that? I mean, you've went to the Catholic education people this week, but how are you finding most people in regard to the reception or your book and what it entails?
I find that most Australians are really bemused by what's happening in the press about the voice. And I tend to call it constitutional change, not the voice.
Right.
And what I was stunned by, we're supposed to believe that Aboriginal people are in two minds about the voice. Have a look at Garma. You know, 100% of the Yolngu behind the voice. Where I was yesterday, in a room of 300 people, mostly black,
all in favour of the voice. You know, I think to be unclear about what's going on with the voice or constitutional change means that you're not listening enough, you're not reading enough, because the vast majority of Aboriginal people, from my experience, and I travel a lot, I've travelled to every state in the last 6 months, I don't meet Aboriginal people who are against the voice. I meet Aboriginal people who express some concern, but they're not against it.
Mm.
And the same with non-Aboriginal people. The vast majority ask me really tentatively, am I in support of the voice? And I say, of course I am. But they're tentative because they've been watching television and seeing a couple of Aboriginal people saying there's not enough information. Of course there's enough information around. We need to be counted in the Constitution like we were counted in the vote in 1967. It's the same decision.
Mm. Look, you know, you're so right. I think the truth has to be told. I mean, I liken some of your words today about it's truth, justice and healing, and which is how the Bring Them Home report was summarised. Truth, justice and healing. Truth is about that education. Justice is about, you know, reparation, redress and compensation and healing for us. And you've made it so eloquently known that country is healing, culture is healing, and that's what we need to be pursuing in healing of our world, not only First Nation people but all people. So truth-telling is so important. And, you know, we're going to be supporting the book now. We might go to a break and talk some more about your curriculum development for children. I know the curriculum development you're talking about, the Dark Emu Juniors, it's been recognised by the Healing Foundation as material for schools. So if you're happy to come back after a song break, Bruce, we'll talk some more. Can we do that?
Yeah, what am I going to sing?
You're not going to sing.
You can sing, Bruce. Yeah. What would you like to sing?
Stay on the line. I want to talk to you while we have a break.
Good on you.
Welcome back to Mortgage Mag. Bruce Pascoe is our guest today. Bruce, there's just a couple of comments that I've made that I've read about support for the book. Marcia Langton said, this is the most important book on Australia and should be read by every Australian. Marcia reporting on the behalf of the Australian. And also from the Australian, Stephen Fitzpatrick said, the truth-telling must go on. And Tyrone Ormsby, Creative Director of City Standard, I guess that's a newspaper somewhere, a vital piece of Australian history and should be mandatory in the national and global curriculum. So, well, you've really set the world on fire as far as truth-telling and education, Bruce. So welcome back to Mortgage Mag.
And it has sold over 360,000 copies.
Get out.
Which is absolutely massive. Did you expect that there would be that demand for it, Bruce Pascoe?
No, I thought it was going to do a few print runs, that's for sure. What we've got to say is it was published in Western Australia by Mugabulla Books after Penguin Books had knocked it back.
Wow.
That has to be stated. But
well, they'll be ruining that day, won't they?
I hope so.
Mugabulla are an amazing publishing company here in Western Australia in the beautiful Broome. And, well, good on them for recognising it for the important book that it was.
Mm.
Yeah, look, but the thing is that the story was strong. The story of our people is strong. And, it's sold a lot of copies and, you know, people say, well, good on you. But really, the story sold itself. And people wanted to know that story because our curriculums, our schools, our politicians, our churches had been downplaying that story for 230, 40 years. So the story told itself. And it's our people, our story, our ancestors who are the story.
Mm. Bruce, I've got to take a big shout-out to the Taylor family. We had a loss just recently, and I can say his name, Alf Taylor. Mugabulla Books published his book, God, the Devil and Me. So I might just take the opportunity to shout out to all the family of the Taylors, Garlets and Humphreys. Mugabulla Books are doing their bit and supporting our people in truth-telling. So I just thought I'd get that in. You may remember the chap. Nice old fella.
I didn't know old fella had passed, but what a champion, what a warrior for our people. Because when I was first getting books published, it was Jack Davis, it was Udguru, it was Alf Taylor. They were the people who were my mentors and my support. So I'm shattered to hear that.
I'm sorry to tell you like it was, but yeah, no, there's been many losses. So, yeah, truly a worry, like yourself, Bruce. Let's not underestimate the work you've both done and the work you're still doing. So I'm glad you're relaxing a little. A dog's help you do that, and By the River, of course, is going to give you that therapeutic, that healing that sounds like is required because you're undertaking so much truth-telling. So... can we talk about the curriculum that's involved in junior Dark Emu? That obviously came about as an extension of Dark Emu, and I guess the encouragement you've had from readers and listeners and our people about just truth telling. So how's that? You must be very proud of that, Bruce.
As an old school teacher, I was desperate for this story to be told in school, and. The original book was obviously an adult book, but I said to Rachel Binsala and Anna Moulton at Mugabulla, and I said, I really want to do a kid's book of the same, a kid's version of the same book. And they were up for it. I think it took us 2 years to do it, maybe longer, but now it's out there. And when I was in Brisbane yesterday, so many of the teachers, vast majority of them were Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, but so many of those teachers came up and said they'd been using it in the classroom. And what a relief it was to be able to use a book which didn't condescend to Aboriginal people. Because even... some good-hearted texts that are written about Aboriginal people are condescending to our people and don't cover all the facts anyway. So that's very pleasing from my point of view. But the really pleasing thing is seeing black kids get a chance to be proud, because I see the reverse a lot and I see the damage that's done, and I grieve for that damage. We need our young people to be successful. We have such a desperate need for young, successful Aboriginal people, and to see young kids damaged is incredibly sad. So to see kids starting to feel pride in what their ancestors did, that we discovered bread, we discovered the automatic fishing machine, that we discovered the secret to human life. All of those things are so important. We ought to be able to talk to our kids, and not in romantic terms, that's what I get accused of all the time, but we need to say to our little kids, your people, your great-grandfather, your great-grandmother, and their ancestors were the first people on earth to imagine human life without land war, not without violence, because we're humans. We're capable of violence, we're capable of sour grapes, we're capable of bad humour, all of those things, but we're also capable of grace and honour. And the old people designed a system where every nation, whether it's, Ewan where I am, whether it's Dungutty up on the New South Wales coast, where and any of your... great peoples over there in WA, all were asked to stay there. And you might be grumpy, you might give each other the bundi every now and then, but you cannot fight for land because you don't own the land. She, Mother Earth, owns you. That is humanity's greatest achievement to this stage. And that's what we need to tell our little kids. You come from the greatest diplomats on earth.
And you just can't underestimate, can you, Bruce Pascoe, that, you know, you were saying when you visited that school here in Perth, you know, 65% of the school population were young Aboriginal kids, yet there was no Aboriginal reference books or novels or anything in their library. And it does make you feel excluded. It does make you feel like you don't matter. And, you know, they wonder why, you know, so many of our kids are struggling within the school system because it's not made relevant to them. And I do congratulate you on the young Dark Emu and making important information accessible for our younger crew as well. It did win the Children's Book Council of Australia Eve Parnell Award, so congratulations for that. But also, a couple of years ago, you were awarded the Australia Council Award for Lifetime Achievement in Literature. And I'm wondering how much your own upbringing and your life has contributed to what you put your energies into now, because people may not be aware that you have worked as a teacher, as a farmer, as a fisherman, a barman, a fencing contractor, a lecturer, an Aboriginal language researcher, an archaeological site worker and an editor. You know, there's some pretty diverse life experiences, Bruce, and I imagine that comes across in your outlook on life and country and what it means to be Aboriginal. How much do those experiences contribute to your very being?
Yeah, all of those things are important. You wouldn't underestimate being a barman because you learn a lot about life, and you wouldn't underestimate building fences because it's one of the best jobs I've ever had because it's a straight line, so it's pretty uncomplicated. All you've got to do is dig holes and drop posts in and wire them up. You know, it's a very peaceful job, and it taught me a lot. But school teaching was the hardest job I've ever done. But that taught me a lot too. Taught me to love kids and to want the very best for kids. But my last weekend, I had all my cousins here, and we were, you know, just sitting on the veranda having a cold drink and eating roast chicken and talking about family, basically. And we were talking about a particular auntie, Auntie Faith, and I learnt more from her about telling stories, even though she could barely write and hadn't done much schooling. She taught me more about literature, about how to write a story, how to tell a story, than anyone else I've known. And, you know, I've known people like Ud Guru, Jack Davis, Frank Hardy, or people like that, but none of them taught me as much as Auntie Faith, and she taught me how to phrase a story, and also she taught me about timing and what's important in a story, and humour and love. So we were sitting around in this veranda out here, rolling around, you know, telling Auntie Faith stories. But then we had to start on Uncle Orb, and then we had to start on my dad, Uncle Elf, and Mum, you know. So all of those people were great storytellers in their own right. I'm not an educated person amongst them. They're all able to feed their families. So to that extent, they were enormously successful. But not a great deal of education amongst them, but my grandmother was so insistent that we stay at school. She used to bribe her. She didn't have any money, but she bribed us to stay at school. And told me when I was 11, she said, Bruce, I'm sick of us being poor, and there's only one way to fix it, and it's education.
Bruce, someone from the New South Wales Premier's Literacy Awards, one of the judges said, essential reading for anyone who wants to understand what Australia once was or what it might yet be if we heed the lessons of long and sophisticated human occupation. And one of our listeners has texted in to say it was devastating to see Sutton's discrediting Bruce's work without extensive consultation of other multi-generational farmers and contemporary researchers far more experienced in these areas than historians and white anthropologists. This SMS person says, as a farmer and research agronomist of over 50 years and a childhood brought up with predominantly Aboriginal kids and their families, Bruce Pascoe's books have been the vocalisation of my farming experience and research of crops in sustainable ways. As he said, it was devastating to see Sutton's discrediting of your work. What do you got to say to people like Sutton and others? I guess it's water off a duck's back, but it must be a little bit of concern that so-called, professional or people with a lot of research knowledge will try and discredit you like this.
Yeah, well, that was actually a shock. It shocked me that you could read the same sources that I looked at and come up with the opposite conclusion. Because, you know, I'm so grateful to farmers because farmers think are a lot closer to the land than a lot of university professors. And a lot of those farmers are writing to me, sending me information about their observations of their land, but also their observations of came from the old people.
Mm. Bruce, we're getting some interference. Do you mind if we go to a song and I'll come back to you and we talk some more for the for another 5-10 minutes? Are you happy to do that if we come back to you? There's an interference on this line.
Yeah.
Okay, please hang up and we'll come back to you. We'll go to a song. Welcome back, Murich Mag here. That was I Got Something For You, Sonny Liu. Bruce, welcome back to Murich Mag 92.1 and Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. It's good to have you on the show. Are you there, Bruce?
Yeah.
Oh, good. That technical issue's gone. So I'm glad that we've been able to resolve the technical area. So if you just tuned in, we've got Bruce Pascoe, author of Dark Emu, that's published back in 2014. And we've been talking to him about his achievements. And take it away, Jodie.
Yeah, and Bruce, you know, for anyone who's just joining us on the Murich Mag program, Bruce Pascoe is our guest this week on Murich Mag, joining us from the East Coast. And it was made into a telly documentary as well there, Bruce.
Yeah, we've been working on that for a while and everything got in the way of it. You know, there were fires down here which stopped dead in its tracks. We had COVID and it took us a while to finish the film, so it was a relief to get it done. And I was really grateful that, country people, Yuin country people, were able to be in that film as well. And one of the loveliest nights I've had for a long, long, long time was when we went up to Sydney to watch the film at the Sydney Film Festival before it was broadcast on ABC, and we all us from down south, we just sat around, you know, we perhaps should have been, you know, feeling the mood of the room or something, work in the room, what do they say, I don't know.
Yeah, I think
and had a beer, and it was so reassuring. I had all my kids there, I had my grandkids there, and all the mob from down south, and we just, it was just a relief for us to have told our story.
Yeah, yeah, it must have been a massive relief. And I'm thinking for anybody who hadn't seen the documentary or who hasn't read the book, Bruce, what are the key facts that you would let them know that you wanted to and did get through in that book?
Well, Jim mentioned Peter Sutton before, and he, you know, wrote a book saying that Dark Emu was a lot of rubbish, that Aboriginal people weren't capable of doing those things. But what we got the chance to do with the film is to rebut those claims, but also to show the new archaeology. And there's a site in Queensland on Mythica Country near Windora, where the people there had been mining grinding stones, and they took out more than 3 million stones, and they didn't need 3 million grinding stones, but they were trading the rest of them. So they traded about 2.8 million grinding stones to the rest of Australia. And the job that the archaeologists are doing now is find out where those stones went. Where did they end up? And the chances are they went across four states. And it is such a great achievement and such a great example of human development and skill and determination, all of those things, industry, all the things of which Aboriginal people are accused of not having. And there it is, you can see it there. And the fact that some Australian archaeologists and anthropologists don't want to know these things, it shows that they're on the wrong side of history. And they'll be on the wrong side of the history come the referendum as well. Mm-hmm. But our people, black people right across Australia, we are on the right side of history because we have dominated human history. We've been here for 100,000 years. You know, when white people will say, oh, no, you've only been here 65,000 years because we proved that up at Mujibibi, you know, blah, blah, blah. And yet there's one white archaeologist saying 120,000 years, and no one wants to believe that old man. You know, they discredit him at every turn because they don't want our people to be right. They don't want our people to prove that the old people who said we've always been here are correct. And I get tired of having to argue on behalf of the old ancestors, and I'm sure every black person listening is tired of that too. Mm-hmm. I've been a pale-skinned Aboriginal person. Every day of my life, one way or the other, I have to justify my race, justify who I am. You don't do that to Jewish people. Irish people don't get asked those questions.
No.
If you say you're from Iceland, it's accepted as a statement of fact. And yet we have to answer this every day of our lives.
Yeah. Look, we're nearly out of time on the program for this week, Bruce, and we could continue talking to you for hours,
sure,
but
could.
We do want to know, what are you working on at the moment?
Well, I'm working on a book about the farm here, you know, about the foods that we produce based on the old people's knowledge. But the thing about the farm is not just about producing food for sale, it's about employing Aboriginal people. Because so many of our people are unemployed and they do, you know, 7 training programs a year, but they never get a job. So this farm is so that people can be employed and earn the money to get their kids' new shoes. I nearly said get their kids' shoes fixed. Well, you don't fix shoes anymore.
Nope.
you can't, but anyway, you know what I mean. So that the kids' teeth are good, the kids' shoes are good, and they can go to school. But the most important thing is that they see their dad and mum get up in the morning, go to work, and earn that money. And that's where the basis of pride, where what I want our people to be free of government.
Mm.
We don't want to be being bossed around by government, and every time government changes, been told new rules.
Too true. Yep. Bruce, it's been a real privilege talking to you, and I take heed about, you know, we're constantly trying to justify our existence, and that's just got to stop, and truth telling has to bring that to an end. Bruce Pascoe, we really enjoyed your time on RTR FM 92.1, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. We look forward to reading some more material, Bruce, so it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you for talking to us on Noongar Country.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, and I hope the hearing abiding at Albany.
Good on you, Bruce. Real pleasure. Thank you.
Bruce Pascoe. And that wraps up the program for another week.
It does.
And going to go out with the amazing King Stingray, who I love.
Right.
Saw them a few weeks ago. Awesome.
Jodie, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk some more. Thank you for tuning in to Moorish Mag on RTRFM.